his gaunt face, with staring eyes and shrunken features that had been delicate, still retained a trace of distinction. He looked like the hulk of an evangelist, or a professor of aesthetics who had spent years in contemplation in obscure museums. She wondered what had destroyed him. What error on the way could bring a man to this?
"You go through life looking for beauty, for greatness, for some sublime achievement," he said. "And what do you find? A lot of trick machinery for making upholstered cars or inner spring mattresses."
"What's wrong with inner spring mattresses?" said a man who looked like a truck driver. "Don't mind him, lady. He likes to hear himself talk. He don't mean no harm."
"Man's only talent is an ignoble cunning for satisfying the needs of his body," said the old bum. "No intelligence is required for that. Don't believe the stories about man's mind, his spirit, his ideals, his sense of unlimited ambition."
"I don't," said a young boy who sat at the end of the counter. He wore a coat ripped across one shoulder. His square-shaped mouth seemed formed by the bitterness of a lifetime.
"Spirit," said the old bum. "There's no spirit involved in manufacturing or in sex. Yet these are man's only concerns, matter. It's all men know or care about. As witness our great industries, the only accomplishment of our alleged civilization, built by vulgar materialists with the aims, the interests, and the moral sense of hogs. It doesn't take any morality to turn out a 10-ton truck on an assembly line."
"What is morality?" she asked.
"Judgment to distinguish right and wrong, vision to see the truth, courage to act upon it, dedication to that which is good, integrity to stand by the good at any price. But where does one find it?"
The young boy made a sound that was half chuckle, half sneer. "Who is John Galt?" She drank the coffee, concerned with nothing but the pleasure of feeling as if the hot liquid were reviving the arteries of her body.
"I can tell you,"
said a small, shriveled tramp who wore a cap pulled low over his eyes.
"I know."
Nobody heard him or paid any attention. The young boy was watching Dagny with a kind of fierce, purposeless intensity.
"You're not afraid,"
he said to her suddenly, without explanation, a flat statement in a brusque, lifeless voice that had a note of wonder. She looked at him. "No," she said, "I'm not."
"I know who is John Galt," said the tramp. "It's a secret, but I know it."
"Who?" she asked, without interest.
"An explorer," said the tramp. "The greatest explorer that ever lived. The man who found the fountain of youth."
"Give me another cup, Black,"
said the old bum, pushing his cup across the counter.
"John Galt spent years looking for it. He crossed oceans and he crossed deserts, and he went down into forgotten mines, miles under the earth. But he found it on the top of a mountain. It took him 10 years to climb that mountain. It broke every bone in his body. It tore the skin off his hands. It made him lose his home, his name, his love, but he climbed it. He found the fountain of youth, which he wanted to bring down to men. Only he never came back."
"Why didn't he?" she asked.
"Because he found that it couldn't be brought down."
The man who sat in front of Reardon's desk had vague features and a manner devoid of all emphasis, so that one could form no specific image of his face, nor detect the driving motive of his person. His only mark of distinction seemed to be a bulbous nose, a bit too large for the rest of him. His manner was meek, but it conveyed a preposterous hint, the hint of a threat deliberately kept furtive, yet intended to be recognized. Reardon could not understand the purpose of his visit. He was Dr. Potter, who held some undefined position with the State Science Institute. "What do you want?" Reardon asked for the third time.
"It is the social aspect that I'm asking you to consider, Mr. Reardon," the man said softly. "I urge you to take note of the age we're living in. Our economy is not ready for it."
"For what?"
"Our economy is in a state of extremely precarious equilibrium. We all have to pool our efforts to save it from collapse."
"Well, what is it you want me to do?"
"These are the considerations which I was asked to call to your attention. I am from the State Science Institute, Mr. Reardon."
"You've said so before. But what did you wish to see me about?"
"The State Science Institute does not hold a favorable opinion of Reardon Metal."
"You've said that, too.
Isn't that a factor which you must take into consideration? No. The light was growing dim in the broad windows of the office. The days were short. Reardon saw the irregular shadow of the nose on the man's cheek and the pale eyes watching him. The glance was vague, but its direction purposeful. The State Science Institute represents the best brains of the country, Mr. Reardon. So I'm told. Surely you do not want to pit your own judgment against theirs?
I do.
The man looked at Reardon as if pleading for help, as if Reardon had broken an unwritten code which demanded that he should have understood long ago. Reardon offered no help.
Is this all you wanted to know? He asked.
It's only a question of time, Mr. Reardon, the man said placatingly. Just a temporary delay. Just to give our economy a chance to get stabilized. If you'd only wait for a couple of years.
Reardon chuckled gaily, contemptuously. So that's what you're after? Want me to take Reardon metal off the market? Why?
Only for a few years, Mr. Reardon. Only until...
Look, said Reardon. Now I'll ask you a question. Did your scientists decide that Reardon metal is not what I claim it is?
We have not committed ourselves as to that.
Did they decide it's no good?
It is the social impact of a product that must be considered. We are thinking in terms of the country as a whole. We are concerned with the public welfare and the terrible crisis of the present moment, which
is Reardon metal good or not.
If we view the picture from the angle of the alarming growth of unemployment, which at present
is Reardon metal good?
At a time of desperate steel shortage, we cannot afford to permit the expansion of a steel company which produces too much, because it might throw out of business the companies which produce too little, thus creating an unbalanced economy which...
Are you going to answer my question?
The man shrugged. Questions of value are relative. If Reardon metal is not good, it's a physical danger to the public. If it is good, it's a social danger.
If you have anything to say to me about the physical danger of Reardon metal, say it. Drop the rest of it. Fast. I don't speak that language.
But surely questions of social welfare?
Drop it.
The man looked bewildered and lost, as if the ground had been cut from under his feet. In a moment, he asked helplessly, But what then is your chief concern?
The market.
How do you mean?
There's a market for Reardon metal, and I intend to take full advantage of it.
Isn't the market somewhat hypothetical? The public response to your metal has not been encouraging. Except for the order from Taggart Transcontinental, you haven't obtained any major...
Well, then, if you think the public won't go for it, what are you worrying about?
If the public doesn't go for it, you will take a heavy loss, Mr. Reardon.
That's my worry, not yours.
Whereas if you adopt a more cooperative attitude and agree to wait for a few years...
Why should I wait?
But I believe I have made it clear that the State Science Institute does not approve of the appearance of Reardon metal on the metallurgical scene at the present time.
Why should I give a damn about that?
The man sighed. You are a very difficult man, Mr. Reardon. The sky of the late afternoon was growing heavy, as if thickening against the glass of the window panes. The outlines of the man's figure seemed to dissolve into a blob among the sharp, straight planes of the furniture. I gave you this appointment, said Reardon, because you told me that you wished to discuss something of extreme importance. If this is all you had to say, you will please excuse me now. I am very busy. The man settled back in his chair. I believe you have spent 10 years of research on Reardon metal, he said. How much has it cost you? Reardon glanced up. He could not understand the drift of the question, yet there was an undisguised purposefulness in the man's voice. The voice had hardened.
$1.5 million, said Reardon.
How much will you take for it?
Reardon had to let a moment pass.
He could not believe it.
For what?
He asked, his voice low. For all rights to Reardon metal.
I think you had better get out of here, said Reardon.
There is no call for such an attitude. You are a businessman. I am offering you a business proposition. You may name your own price.
The rights to Reardon metal are not for sale.
I am in a position to speak of large sums of money. Government money.